Welcome to the One Solution podcast.
In this podcast, we're going to explore if there really is one solution to all the world's problems. And perhaps that solution lies in the mind. The mind is both the source of those problems, but also the solution to those problems.
Hello, all One Solution podcast listeners. We have another conversation as a podcast this time, and this particular podcast is done in partnership with the Spark Initiative, which is another organization that we co-founded a collective with. So the Spark Initiative works primarily with youth. They're doing amazing things inside of school, outside of school, in juvenile prisons. They have their own curriculum that they can teach to anybody, but they teach to, you know, other teachers, and they go into all these schools and teach them about their inner spark, in the way they say it. What is their inner spark, and what is there before they're before we start making things up as humans. So we've actually visited them and seen their work live. And if you go to our Facebook or YouTube, we're going to be posting a lot, you know, some videos from that visit and some of the stuff that the kids were saying they had learned. And it just blows your mind, because kids, in our mind, is the future. They're going to build what's going to happen. So focusing on that is just really, really important. So in this podcast, myself, which is Adik, for those of you who can't recognize this voice, and Mara Gleason Olson, which is the two people from One Solution who's in this podcast. And then we have Brooke and Ashley from the Spark Initiative. And yeah, I really hope you enjoy it. We're kind of just opening up the room with a simple question, and then we just talk about working with youth, what we think really matters if you're going to work with youth, and how what we're doing in our collective might be a little bit different than other youth work is being done. So really, really hope you enjoy it, and check out the Spark Initiative on thesparkinitiative.com and read what they're doing. If you want their program in their schools, I highly recommend you reach out to them. So without further ado, enjoy. I have a first question to open up the room, and that is, you know, for people who are new to what we do, what would you say is like the simplest source of why kids get affected by learning about their mind?
I think for me, it sounds so simple, and yet when I share it in classes, I'm thinking like, this is so simple. They're going to be like, why is she making a big deal about this? But I think it's kids don't get told this. Kids don't get told how their mind works. So they're just trying to navigate through something that they don't really understand. And especially in teenage years, it's just all a jumbled mess anyways in their heads. And so when they don't understand that, and then they are being told by everybody on the outside, you know, this is how it is, and you are X, Y, and Z. When we come in, it's just something different. They haven't heard, you know, they're so used to people talking to their problems and to their behavior and to their labels. And when we come in and don't do that, it's kind of like, wait, you want to hear about me, like the actual person, not all of the stuff that everybody else sees. So I think that's just the simple yet different thing that we do. And it seems to be very impactful when you walk into a classroom with that instead of speaking to everything else that most other people do.
Yeah, I would also add that kids in particular it's almost trained to listen to other people rather than themselves. So they just kind of go on assumption that other people, particularly adults around them, know better than they would ever know. So they don't get to know this innate capacity that they have inside to guide them through life that's already there. They're taught to look to the outside or to other people for the answers. So when they start to see that they have this kind of internal navigation system that they can count on, then they naturally start to question things and see things differently than they normally would. And I think that's really different. And it takes a little bit too. Like, it takes a little bit for kids to realize, oh no, they really want to know what I see and how I think, rather than, you know, us going in there teaching them something that, you know, then we'll test them on later.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's such a cool distinction that you're teaching them about the mind. You're teaching them about thought and the fact that they experience life through the lens of their own minds, through the lens of their own thinking, but you're not doing that in a teachery way or a parenty way, saying, this is how you experience life. And if you could just understand that, you know, like, I think that's what's so fascinating about what you're pointing to is you are teaching them that they have a mind and that they have thoughts, but that they've always had that. And that's something that's within them. It's not something that was taught to them or given to them by, you know, an adult. It's something that's always been true. And that the more they understand that, they can look to it as a guide, as a sort of self-sustaining guide to get them through life, that they have this resilience and well-being and always have done, and can, with greater understanding of that, use their thinking or their mind or their understanding of their mind more effectively in life. But I think what you brought up, Ashley, is so important, and it's almost exactly what we heard just last week when we were in the prisons listening to the inmates talk about why this program working with Anna, learning about their mind, had been so powerful. They said the first thing was that she was one of the only teachers we'd ever had in a program that walked in and immediately said and felt like she really meant it, that we were completely okay. There was nothing wrong with us. We weren't broken. We didn't need fixing. Mm-hmm. And these were guys who, you know, have been in and out of prison. Some of them in prison for 10, 20 years, have had addiction issues, have done horrible crimes. And any person they've ever sat down with before has normally come from the orientation that there's something wrong here. And to sit with someone who comes from the orientation that, oh yeah, no, you're fine, you're not broken, you, just like every human on the planet, have misunderstood your mind at times and have used thought against yourself at times, that's totally normal, no big deal, underneath that you're healthy. So it's interesting that that's exactly the same thing you brought up, whether you're working with kids in a school or inmates in a prison, or in our case, sometimes parents in the South Side who are stressed about the violence here. It's that feeling that we're pointing them to something that's already right within them that stands out.
Yeah, exactly.
And what was even cooler was like one of the guys, and I've heard this from the teenagers we work with too. It's like, and this is like basic basics. It's like, that they feel like we care, and like that's it. And like it's so obvious, but like it occurred to me, like, oh, they don't often get that much. That actually there are people who really care about them. That that actually see that they have stuff going for them. That they can do something inside, and like. Even the simplest thing, like when we were creating like these projects with the kids, and they were like, you can see they were so used to looking for guidance from the teachers or for somebody else to what to do, or almost like they've forgotten that they could figure out things themselves, or that they could actually make change happen themselves. It's like, it was just this like habit of like,
deferring to
mm-hmm. things. So like,
yeah.
So when we ask, what do you guys want to do? Like, what do we want to do?
Yeah.
Can we do something? It's like, yeah. It's like, and it's a little, you know, it's interesting, but it's a little sad that it's that basic that, and it's not that normal for a lot of people, just that people care and they see, and you can look towards how they can figure out their own thing and how what they have, everything they need inside of them. It's like mind-boggling that that isn't just obvious everywhere, but it is really, really, really powerful.
Yeah, we see that too with our kids. They, when we're in the classroom and we ask a question and they don't immediately know, they're kind of just looking to us like, okay, you're going to tell me? I'm like, no, what do you think? Like, just, I don't know. What do you, there's not really a right answer. I'm just asking, what do you think? And they just kind of look at me like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And then when they finally realize, wait a second, she really is asking me, and they say something, it really starts to open it up with that conversation. And it definitely does take a little bit of, they aren't used to it. So it takes a little bit of a period of time for them to be like, oh, okay. Yeah, I actually could talk and I do have some answers, and they really do want to know what it's about. So, yeah.
It dawned on me though, this is it's kind of a different layer of looking at what is creating the impact. So we started the conversation with kind of like, what is impacting kids? But then we've almost like really quickly jumped to, well, it's really the orientation or the feeling of the people who are working with the kids. Or in the case of Anna in Portland, the prison inmates, or in with us in Chicago.
Anyone really.
Anyone who's working with another human. And I don't want to like totally steer this entire episode in that direction, but I think it's worth noting because it just dawned on me as I was listening to it, is I think what all of us have learned and what we have in common is that we don't ever see our job or the people we work with as the cause of our stress. So because we know that, because we know that's how the mind works, that things outside of me and the people I work with, no matter how rowdy or how, you know, kind of combative they might get, my own freedom of mind is not, you know, restricted by others' behavior. So when I work with people, and I'm sure Anna has had days, and I know we have had days where you want to get stressed and blame it on them. You want to get annoyed, yeah, or you want to be distracted. But I feel so, so profoundly grateful that I've learned that that's not the way the system works. That's not the way the mind works. And so I think innocently, I don't think anybody starts working with kids or with inmates because they don't care. I think they do care. That's why you start doing that work. You wouldn't do it otherwise. But it's easy without an understanding of the mind and without an understanding of how stress or overwhelm or distraction works to very quickly start, you know, relating to kids in a way where you're just frustrated all the time, or you just give them the answer so you can move on. Or, you know, like it's so easy to see how people can fall into that habit innocently. And I think when we're talking about this, it's really important to see that I think everyone starts out caring, but that ability to maintain the caring and the curiosity and the spaciousness to look to people, to see them whole, to have the patience to draw their well-being out of them, that really comes from exactly us having learned what we're teaching them.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. So Ashley and I just started teaching in a juvenile jail setting, and I haven't been in the classroom with kids in a long time, being one of the teachers. And what I found fascinating was we didn't have a whole lot of conversations about what we would do that day, except for get to know the kids. That was our objective. And at the end of the first class, the teacher in the classroom stopped Ashley and said, "I can't believe how engaged they were and how connected. I'm so excited about this class. They really were connected to you guys." And the fact that we had just met her 45 minutes before, and that's what she saw, was just a testament kind of to what you were talking about, that just by us knowing what we know about how the mind works and knowing that we all have the same well-being inside of us, the same, you know, wholeness inside of us, we were able to connect with them as human beings rather than kids that were in jail.
Right.
And I don't think they're used to that. And I don't think kids in general are used to being connected to as human beings, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah. And especially not kids in jail, I'm guessing.
Yeah, definitely not.
Or any kid that's struggling. Like, I remember when I was struggling as a kid, like, you have this sense that I shouldn't be this way. You know, it shouldn't be this way. And I think the more the struggle, the more, if you're not told otherwise, you make the conclusion that I shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't be this way. And I'm different. I'm different than the people who are not struggling. And that's the way I should be. So I think it's totally right. It's like, if you then meet somebody and they just treat you like a normal person, you actually become
more normal,
you know, to you, quote unquote normal. But they treat you as somebody who's not, you know, who's just a human, no different than anybody else. Then you become no different than anybody else. It's the strangest thing. Like, you know, if they treat you like you are blah, 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 mm-hmm. then you become that. It's really strange that we're actually, in trying to help, we can also create more problems because we try to separate them and saying they're different in the name of helping, but actually we're dividing them away from just the normal human experience. And I think the worse the struggle, then the more important it is, almost, like, which is counterintuitive, because you think the worse a person is struggling, the more you should, like, oh, this is different. You really got to make sure, blah, blah, blah. This is not, you know, just a normal person struggling. And then that's part of the problem. It really is seeing them as the same, no matter what. And every time I don't do that, I know I don't connect with whoever I'm talking with. And I have that because I'm human. I'll meet somebody. I'm like, oh, okay, I don't see it immediately. But then I go and kind of look for it. And I'm like, okay, yeah, no, it's the same. It's the same. And then the connection is there. So.
What do you two feel like has been the most surprising thing you've learned over the years teaching this curriculum in schools?
Oh, that's a tough one. I feel like there's so much. I feel like the most surprising thing to me, this sounds so silly, but the most surprising thing to me is every time I'm doing this program in anywhere, I'm always surprised at the end, like, oh, they got it too. Like, oh, wait, they understand too. Because sometimes I can get really in my head and be like, oh, is this really like that much for them? Are they seeing it? And every time, at the end of the program, when they start saying all the stuff that they realize, I'm like, oh my gosh, it happened again. and seeing it in everything from private Christian schools to jail settings, like in everything in between, I'm like, oh my gosh, they get it too. Everybody. And it just, yeah, I think that's the most surprising thing. It sounds so ridiculous and silly, but it's always such a fun reminder to me that, yeah, this is true. What I'm saying actually is true, and it's behind everything, and it really is helpful when people understand it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is like one of the most, I'm always shocked, and I don't know why, because I just, every time I'm surprised, I'm like, why are you surprised again? But that it is helpful. Like it, when anyone, for anyone's, even if you're not really struggling, because I know when I came across this, I wasn't really struggling with anything that I could see or blame or point to, but it was still immensely helpful. And I think like that's what I'm always surprised about with people I work with, that when they start to really see how the mind works, that it's in some way helpful, no matter who they are.
Yeah.
Even the kids that have their head down and they don't even talk the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
We have some of those too.
I'm like, wait, you were really listening? What?
Yeah. They'll suddenly start talking and it's so profound and you realize they've gotten so much and you're like, oh my God, I didn't even think you were paying attention.
Yep.
I just always envision the story Ashley tells about the kid poking his head out of the cabinet.
Yeah, I had a kid who would... When I first started going there, he would go inside of a cabinet and he would just shut the door. And I would be like, all right, well, I'm just going to keep talking. And eventually, like slowly but surely, he would start like opening the cabinet a little bit and peering out and just a little bit more. And then sometimes he would open the cabinet and actually talk and answer a question I had. I'm like, oh, he's still listening and he's in the cabinet.
How old was this kid?
He was a teenager.
Oh my gosh. That's
yes.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
Oh, so great. Sounds like a cat.
He was in one of our alternative school settings. So he'd been kicked out and he'd been labeled all these different things. And he ended up being the sweetest kid ever. He went from being in a cabinet and just peeking out to like halfway through the program, he would actually start, because I was at this school for the whole day, he would know what class I was going to next. So after my class was done, he would meet me outside and he would take all my bags and walk me to my next classroom to help me. And then he would go back to his next class and come back. So yeah, I loved that kid.
That's so funny. Like it's almost the same thing as we as adults do. It's just, we don't have a closet. We don't have the idea that we should have a closet. So we just kind of, yeah, we just shut down.
Yeah.
Like cross our legs, or like that's the word, cross our arms and legs. Like that's our closet. But
yeah,
we do exactly the same. I wish I had a closet sometimes, actually.
No, but it's such a cool example of how you were just like, okay, that's fine. And I'm going to, you know, speak to you like I'm speaking to anybody, and I'm not going to make a big deal out of it or make you feel wrong or weird or stupid about it.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, eventually he comes out of his cupboard. I mean, I think that's such a profound metaphor for all humans.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. And I think that's another thing that's, you know, like kind of points to what we were saying before. What's different is that because we have this understanding, we don't put our expectations on them. So we don't expect them to just sit at their desk and pay attention to every word we're saying. And part of that is because we don't know what's going on in their head at that moment. We don't know. So for us to try to like push our expectations on them doesn't even make sense, right? Because of the way that we know how the mind works. We have no idea what happened, you know, 15 minutes before we came in, or where they are in their head. So, and that's really kind of an adjustment when we go into classes too, for the other adults in the classroom.
They're like, yeah.
Wait a minute, you're going to let him sit in that cabinet?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is any adult, parent, teacher listening to this is probably like, well, then I'm sure your classes are just freaking mayhem. But what's amazing is what you just the example you just gave about being in the juvenile jail is within 45 minutes, the woman noticed, wow, you've so connected with these kids and they're engaged. And she's obviously commenting on it because it's abnormal. They're not usually that engaged. They're not. So I think it's one of those fascinating things where people are so paranoid that in order to control kids, you have to just yell at them, go after them, assume that they need your constant yelling and disciplining. Whereas you guys are going in with a completely opposite orientation and you're getting the result that the other behavior is hoping for, but not getting.
Yeah. It does sound crazy to others that listen and they're like, what do you mean you just let them in a cabinet? Or what do you mean you just, it does sound crazy. It does. Like before I understood the mind, I would say that was crazy. Why are you going to let a kid sit in the cabinet? He should be sitting at his desk. What's wrong with you, crazy lady? I'm sure that's what the teacher was thinking in her head too.
Good job, lady.
Like, what's going on? You're just going to let him chill out but that's also not to say that we don't ever, you know, they don't ever have consequences for their behaviors, because they are in schools. And we do have to, you know, they have to know that, because in life, when they do things, they have consequences, and at school they do. So I just make it really clear up front, like, listen, this is going to be really different. This class is different. However, there are still these set of rules that you have to follow at school. And if you don't, then I'm sure that consequences are going to happen and I can't stop them as much as I would like to. I feel so bad whenever the kids get in trouble, but Like, you knew that. That's your choice and you see it. And then later on, we can talk about it and why they made that choice, or maybe what, you know, what was showing up for them in that moment that now they see that they didn't then. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just makes, you know, of course we're going to have, you know, we need to organize in any way, shape or form. We need certain system and certain just basic frameworks. We need that in a business. We need that in school. We need that as a family, as a country. Like, that's just like a good idea. But if you rely solely on that, you don't really get anywhere. Like, a business leader who tries to do that with employees, just create rules without any feeling, without any like real engagement, just engagement on paper.
And that belief in their people, like they're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. They're just a cog in the system versus like, you know, not to sound too out there, but like infinite potential within a body, you know, but it's true. Like if people looked at each other as like, no, there's like something limitless here within all these kids in this classroom, anything can happen. They can learn anything. They have the ability to learn it. They're like genius kids who are just like dormant if they're distracted. Like it's still there. It just changes everything if you're a teacher. Just looking at the classroom and see like potential, you know? Yeah. Looking at your business like, oh, there's just potential there. It's within all these, there's like, I have a group of people and they all have this potential inside of them. Rather than like, oh no, I got to make sure it's just a completely different framework. And I know it's back to what you were saying, Mara, it gets tiring and you get hopeless if you start looking at the classroom or at your business or at your family. It's just like, oh no, they're not behaving the way, you know, this guy's going in the closet or my wife's behaving like this or my clients are like that or my colleagues. It just becomes...
It reminds me of a woman I worked with who was kind of the head of HR for a big hotel chain. And she said after a day of kind of talking about this, she's like, God, I'm realizing like my entire job, my position, my department is set up on the assumption that people are bad. It's like, I want to overhaul this department because I realized our whole mentality is essentially playing to the worst in people and trying to protect the company from that. And she was like, I'm just wondering what this place would feel like if that wasn't our foundation or our starting point as an HR department. I was like, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Hey, I had a question. Sorry, were you going to say something, Brooke?
The only thing I was going to say is I think it also, not only potential, but it's like trusting in the fact that the kids know what's right for them in the moment. So why the kids in the cabinet, who cares? But if that's like trusting that there's some sort of, you know, navigation going on in that moment for him, that he needs to be in the closet or, like the kid that we spoke with or in our class at the jail, the one that just wouldn't talk. And when I finally said like, hey, back there, you're really quiet. He said, I'm just in a bad mood. Something just happened. And no, trusting that, like, okay, he knows he just needs to be quiet or have a moment and not trying to push it. Right. I think is helpful too.
Right. And seeing the wisdom in that instead of getting annoyed with it, it's like, right. Wow. That's like, pretty freaking amazing that he's, as a kid,
right.
Self-aware enough to know, if I open my mouth right now, I'm just going to spew a bunch of crap because I'm in a bad mood. So trust me, ladies, you don't want me to talk. You're like, good for him, as opposed to like, well, you can't just dip out because you're having a bad day. Like, no,
yeah, you have to participate in this class right now because we're here.
Yeah. So the question I want to ask you guys, because we actually... we're just talking with the adults in prison when we were with Anna about some of the metaphors that the kids we've worked with here in Chicago come up with that are awesome. And they were saying, oh, those are really helpful because they're universal. You know, they're not teen metaphors, they're human metaphors. So like I could share a couple, but I'd love to hear what, you know, you guys have been working with a bunch of different kids for many years now. What are some of the fun things they've taught you, the metaphors that they've come up with to explain their mind? But like two of them, this isn't really metaphor, this is more of a catchphrase, but the thing that the kids in Southside Chicago are totally into is this phrase that every action doesn't need a reaction. The idea that just because something happens to you or happens to one of your friends, and in their case, it's often violence, just because somebody gets in a fight, you don't have to act. You don't have to react to it.
Just because you have a thought.
And just because you have a thought, you don't have to act to it. So they're really, when they're saying that, they're referring to actions outside of them, but also compulsions inside their own head. That's just thought, it doesn't need reacting to. That's just something somebody else did. I don't have to react to that. And honest to God, they say, how come no one ever taught me that before? Mm-hmm. Because they innocently, via osmosis, have been raised to believe the opposite. If you say something to me, I'm going to get up in your face. If you hurt my friend, I'm going to go jump your bones. It's just like every action in their upbringing has been met with a reaction. And so that just looks like
all feelings must be acted on.
Right. And the stronger the feeling, the bigger the action required. And this idea that you can have thoughts and feelings and that it's normal that you can have really strong thoughts and feelings sometimes, but that actually there's no boss inside your head making you react to them. You don't have to, you have a choice in the matter. And they love that because that's, honest to God, had never been even proposed to them as an option. And you can imagine, as teens, it's keeping them out of a lot of trouble. There's a lot less suspensions and expulsions or jail time just by understanding, not just as a catchphrase, but the mechanics of the mind that explain why that's true. And then the other one that, you know, Dejan, who you guys have seen many times that we work with, came up with that I loved, because it's so simple, it's so visual, and it's true, is he said, I realize that when I get upset about something, all I see is red. Just red, red, red. I'm just angry. I want to go lash out, whether it's like a girl broke up with me or, you know, I heard one of my homies got hurt. Like, if I get upset, all I see is red. He said, but I learned that my mind is like a traffic light, that if I just sit there and wait, eventually red changes color. And then, you know, you turn to yellow and it's like, okay, it's headed in the right direction, but it's not. And then eventually you get to green. So you feel better at some point and then you can go. But when it's red, you don't get to go.
I love that.
The guys in prison were like, mm-hmm. That makes so much sense.
Uh-huh.
And they have all kinds of different ones. But I would just love to hear some of the stuff the kids have shared with you guys.
Yeah. The one thing that came to my mind as you were saying that is so we were doing an activity once, because we do a million different things with them, and we were really talking about state of mind and how when you get all of this stuff up in your head, it can be a little bit harder to get through things. So if you're trying to take a test and you have all of these things in your head of like, this is terrible, I'm gonna fail, I suck at math, I'm, you know, whatever, I'm gonna be poor and doomed and living on the side of the road, and I'm trying to take this test right now. That's not that helpful, right? And so we were talking about that, and the way that we were showing this is that they were going through this obstacle course without blindfolds on, so they could see everything. So we grabbed chairs and books and trash cans and all sorts of stuff, and we put it all in the way, and they have to navigate through that. So we timed them going through without blindfolds on. And then we time them again going through with blindfolds on. And we talk about how, you know, that's like, if you're going through something without blindfolds on, so that's like, you're in a clear state of mind, you're just, everything's flowing and you're just, it makes it a little bit easier, right? And then it doesn't mean you can't do it, but when you have all this stuff going on, it's kind of like blindfolds on. It just makes it a little bit harder to navigate through. And so we're doing all that. And this one kid comes up and he does this obstacle course, but he just bulldozes through it with his blindfolds on. I mean, kicking books out of the way, pushing everything out of the way. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. And his time was great. And so afterwards, I said, so what was that about? And he goes, well, I mean, I just realized that all of the stuff that you put out are just thoughts. And if they're just thoughts, I don't have to pay them any attention. So I can just kick them out of the way. And I thought, well, that's so cool to see. And he said, I could totally do that in real life too. If I have this stuff coming up, I can realize it's just thoughts. I don't have to do anything with it. I could just kick them out of the way. It's not a big deal. I'm like, oh, that's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. That's yeah. Cool. He made a bit of a mess, but but I loved the point that he got across to everybody was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, it is just a thought. It doesn't matter. You can just kick it out of the way. I'm like, okay.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Do you have any that are coming to mind, Brooke?
Yeah, no, not right now. Yeah, no, I've been thinking, but no.
There was a woman in the women's prison last week who talked about firing her shitty committee in her head. And I'd never heard that one before, her shitty committee. She's like, yeah, I've just been coming to this class and I feel like finally I've been able to fire my shitty committee. And she was equal parts lighthearted, but then she'd also kind of fill in little bits and pieces of her backstory, which is that she's, you know, suffered from horrible sexual abuse from a very young age. And that, you know, she then ended up developing night terrors and what was later diagnosed to be dissociative disorder and split personality and all this other stuff. And she talked about just popping out of her head and going into this bubble over here outside of her, just because she would get so overwhelmed, which you can completely understand that if that was your experience, that would make sense. In a way, there's wisdom in that. It's like, if you have so much pain and suffering going on from trauma and abuse, then finding a way to pop outside of that is pretty cool. Or finding a way to go ease that temporarily with the use of drugs makes total sense. So you can see how, I mean, that's what I loved every time, like it's been multiple times, but the three times I've been into a prison is you sit with these people and you hear their story and you're like, yeah, totally makes sense. You know, I can absolutely see why you did the things you did and that they were the best you could do. But she was so cool. She talked about, she has been in and out of therapy for 20 years. She's had all these different diagnoses, all these different medications, and she's only in the fifth week of Anna's class. And she's fired her shitty committee. She hasn't been popping out of herself and into this bubble because she hasn't needed to. And she said she's only had one night terror and it wasn't that bad. And she used to have them every night.
Every night.
Like to the point where she would wake up screaming and, you know, sort of flailing about. And it was just amazing. And she came up to us after the end of the class. She's like, yep. I mean, I went to every kind of specialist you can imagine. I went and she said some guy's name. She's like, do you know him? He's in Texas. He's like the best such and such for dissociative disorder. And nothing, none of that helped me. And no one ever told me I could fire the shitty committee. And I mean, it's just so funny how it's the simplest little things that click for people, but it's seeing that it's within them. It's always been within them. And again, I mean, that the fact that Anna just knew that about her from the moment she sat down with her is, yeah, no matter what has happened to you or how long you've been struggling with mental illness or addiction, you're okay too.
It reminds me, my daughter, recently, she's 9, and like 6 months ago, she OCD runs deep in my family, and she has some tendencies that come up every once in a while, and she gets attached to some thoughts that she has, and you can tell they like swirl in her head, and like like my daughter disappears, and some crazy person comes to surface, right? But it hasn't happened in a really long time. And the other day she brought it up to me. She was talking to me about that the last time it happened and it went kind of bananas. And she said something like, what did she say? She said, well, why didn't you tell me that before? And I said, tell you what? And she said that if it's making me feel that way, it's not true about who I am. And I don't remember saying that to her, but that's all she needed. Like she could feel herself that that wasn't really who she was. Like, and she just said it in such a simple, like 9-year-old way. Like, why didn't you tell me that before?
Yeah.
But it wasn't true about if she goes, that's all I needed to hear. And she, you know, and I was like, oh,
wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So did she mean like prior to that, when she was having that kind of like obsessive thinking and getting spun up in her head, she thought that was who she really is. And now she doesn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, and I almost like don't tell people details because they're kind of crazy. Like my daughter would say some crazy stuff. But it got really crazy that night and she kept asking me, I can kind of remember, she kept asking me like, how do you know it's not true? How do you know it's not true? How do you know it's not true? And I must have said something to the effect of, well, because you feel the way you feel, it can't be true. Because who you are is not, I always say, you're just love. And if you don't feel that, then it's not true about who you are. And she heard it, because, you know, not many 9-year-olds can tell you exactly what you said 6 months later. But but she just said it kind of in passing, and it was like, and I just thought, wow. She heard that because she could feel who she really was.
Yeah.
And I think that's like what you were saying about that woman. She just heard something about who she really was and saw like she's not the shitty committee. Yeah. Right? She didn't have to listen to that.
That's so cool.
It reminds me of my little nephew. One of the first time he was going to do a sleepover over at grandma and grandpa's, they just started playing this like game at home, like called Zelda. It's like an old game, but they started playing with the family. And
he's 4, right?
And he was 4 at the time. And at home with my sisters, then it's like going over to grandpa, going on to grandma first night or something. And then he's going to bed and my grandma hears him crying. He's up at the bedroom crying. And it's like, she's like, why are you crying? Well, I want to, you know, play Zelda and really enjoy playing Zelda. And she's like, my grandma's like, are you okay? He's like, yeah, you know, it's just my brain that wants it. I'm okay. And it's just my brain really wants to do this, but I'm okay. And it's not that long, actually. I can come home tomorrow. And my grandma was like, that is just so cool. And they haven't talked about that and taught him like, oh, but you know, it's just like, no, it's just, my brain really wants, I don't know where I picked it up, but like my brain really wants to play Zelda, but I'm okay. And it's not that long, you know, I can wait till tomorrow.
That's so cool.
Oh my god. Yeah, kids.
That is really cool. I love that because it just shows that it really is inside of everybody, and everybody knows this at some level. And especially with our kids, when I hear kids like you, I feel like I just have an ear for it now, and so I hear it all the time. I'm like, yeah, look at that, look at that. Like you already have it, and that's how it's coming up for you. It's so cool.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It reminds me of the time that Linda, our mutual colleague, was driving her grandson home to his house after having spent the day with him. And she passed her house on the way to his house and he burst into tears. And she's like, Nicholas, what's wrong? He's in the back in the little car seat and he's crying. And he said, I told myself we were going to your house and now you know we're not. She was cracking up because he knew enough to know no one told me we were going back to your house. But I had told myself that we were going to your house and I just got it that we're not. And so I'm sad. And I think of that every time I get upset as an adult because I'm disappointed that an expectation that I made up, that I told myself, didn't come true. And I realized that's most of them. Most of them are nothing in the outside world gave me any indication this was going to happen, but I told myself it was going to happen this way and I'm pissed it didn't. But yeah, like kids know. It's so cool how they know.
Yeah. And how cool is it that he was okay with being sad because he made it up, but somewhere along the lines, when we grow up, we decide, oh, no, it should be that way because that was my expectation. Then we get pissed at other people.
Right.
He wasn't like mad at grandma. He was just sad that he had told himself something it turned out to be not true.
I love that.
Well, is that a perfect place to end this episode?
Yeah, I told myself that this would be a good time to end this episode.
Yes, I told myself.
I love it.
Well, thanks, you guys.
Thank you, guys.
And I'm so excited to come back in a couple of weeks and see you again.
I know. Yeah. So soon.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys.